This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, curious people. Welcome to Pretty Curious, our podcast on all things beauty. I'm Jonathan Van Ness. This week, we're talking to dermatologist Dr. Renee A. Beach. Dr. Renee A. Beach is an MD who specializes in dermatology. She is also a board-certified fellow of the Royal College of Physicians and Surgeons of Canada. She established her own practice, Dermatelier on Avenue in Toronto, with the goal of providing dermatologic expertise and excellence to patients of all skin types in a modern and comfortable setting. We're diving deep into injectables. What are the types? What are the differences? How long do they last? Should we use them? When should we use them? What's the deal? We're debunking the myths about cosmetic dermatology. But before we get into our gorgeous conversation with Dr. Renee A. Beach, it's time to get ready with me. We could not, absolutely not, have our JVM product review not be sunscreen on an episode with a stunning dermatologist. So this one, I just got in. It's gorgeous. Elta MD UV Clear Broad Spectrum SPF. It's $41, but it's very well worth it. I love that it's a combo mineral and chemical sunscreen. It goes on like a serum, non-comedogenic, meaning it's not clogging the pores, but it's very light, very gorgeous. I love that it has SPF 46. It's nice and strong, but I also love that it's very non-chalky and stunning. If you want to go, if you're more of like, I don't like, I like mineral only, you could also try the La Roche-Posay Anthelios Mineral Sunscreen. It's $35, lightweight matte finish, goes on nicely under makeup. This is also really fun. This is a love letter from Allison, our resident producer who we love, but this is going in. Trader Joe's apparently has a stunning $10 dupe for the Super Goop Unseen sunscreen. It's nearly identical with that clear matte finish, no white cast whatsoever. It's Allison approved. It's in Pretty Curious. You better fucking slay, girl. Our listener questions of the week. Our first listener question is mascara tips for small eyes to keep it from going everywhere. Type slash wand shape slash technique. One thing is I would definitely say to curl your lashes first. Make sure that, because I feel like putting mascara onto uncurled lashes just makes it a little bit harder, and it just goes on better when you've curled the lash, because most mascara applicators are kind of have that like real cylindrical bend to them. So if you're trying to put on like a straighter lash, it just doesn't like meld as well. So make sure you're really curling them well. And you're going to notice that different mascara or different eyelash curlers have very different shapes. Some are more flat and some are more rounded. So you want to get the one that like most closely corresponds to your eye shape. Then the other thing I would say is that most mascara wands have way too much product on them, like way too much. And it's why they apply like a little clumpier. So what I like to do is I take like a small piece of a toilet paper and I just kind of pat the outside of the mascara wand before I do my first application. And I don't go up, down, up, down, up, down with the mascara wand in the tube, because I read in the 90s that it puts like air bubbles into the formula. So I don't do that. I just take it out and I go plot, plot, plot quickly with some tissue or toilet paper. Then I put it on, and that you could, you know, whatever, tissue, a little Kleenex, a little toilet paper to wash your hands, or have like separate tissue paper like out by where you do your makeup. And that takes off the excess, so you're not getting like such a clumpy application. Or if I don't want to do that, or if sometimes I forgot, I do always have like clean mascara wands, like disposable ones. And I'll take that and I'll like comb through my lashes after I've applied mascara to get the clumps out. And that just kind of separates it and makes it look like as pretty and full and like clean as possible. So that's how I do mine. And that's what I like to do. I also always like to have some micellar water and Q-tips so that if you did get the mascara like up on your eyelid or you just got it somewhere, you can put the micellar water on your Q-tip and just like spot treat, get that little mascara all the way off without like fucking up your whole makeup application. So that was a gorgeous question. I hope that helped. Our next question is, should I change my skin/hair care routine as I age? I just turned 40 and totally okay with grays and wrinkles. I think your skin and hair care routine, yes, will need to change. But I don't necessarily think that like your style choices need to change. Like if you want to have like long hair as you age, go for it. I feel like when I first started doing hair in the salon, like a lot of women were like, oh, I'm, you know, 50 or whatever. I need to cut my hair short. I don't think that's the case. We can have any length of hair at any age and that's all gorgeous. It's about how you feel. But I do think that as we get older, like silver hair typically is a little more prone to frizz. It can be a little bit drier. It also can get prone to yellowing from like hard water or chlorine or like getting burnt. Like from heat styling, sometimes it can get this like yellow cast. If you don't put enough heat protection on really silver hair, it can get like this like yellow burntness to it if you like literally flat iron it and curling iron it too hot. So you may need to, as you age with silver hair, introduce like a blue violet shampoo, or you may need to do like a heavier blowout cream than maybe what you used to have. Or if your hair is getting finer as you age, you may need to like use a volumizing shampoo and conditioner that you didn't used to, or like incorporate a volumizing foam that you didn't used to. Also with your makeup, a skincare routine. I think that I've seen a lot that like, I think you still can use powders on more mature skin. I think there's probably like a time and place, but like cream is going to blend better and not settle as much in wrinkles as powders will. Also, as we get older, the skin just gets a little bit thinner. So you might need a little bit more like, you might need like more retinol as you get a little bit older to try to smooth those topically. You might need like more sunscreen as you get older. Or also could be as you get older with your skincare routine that you need to be a little bit more gentle. Like maybe it doesn't, you aren't taking the exfoliation and like the intense serums as easily as you were. So I think just stylistically, we get to be whoever we want to be. But I do think that as we age, we need to be aware that we evolve and our bodies change and they're going to need different things as we get older. And one thing I have noticed in the salon is that when people get stuck or when they just don't evolve their skincare and hair care as they get older, you can kind of tell. Like, not in the terms of like, just that you're like, ooh, like, that, you know, they could do this or they could do like a little that. So you want to stay open and evolving when it comes to your skincare and your hair care, because just, and on the same coin with skincare especially, you need to, and we're actually going to talk about that. You do need to, consistency is really important with skincare. So you don't want to be changing like every 3 seconds. But you also, as we age, like your body's going to need different things as we age. So thank you so much for those questions. And also thank you so much for listening to Pretty Curious. If you are vibing Pretty Curious, if you're looking forward to this every Monday, share it with your friends. But now let's get to our conversation with Dr. Beach. Dr. Renee A. Beach, how are you today? Thanks for coming on Pretty Curious.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a long time.
Dr. Beach, darling, will you tell us like about dermatology and like what you got to do to become a dermatologist?
Dermatology is the study of skin, hair, and nails. It's a branch or a subspecialty of medicine. And a dermatologist is a medical doctor. So whether that is an MD designation, there's also a DO or doctor of osteopathy. That's another designation. But they're a medical doctor who has undergone a minimum of 4 years of training after medical school, and that's focused in the skin, the hair, the nails. So in the United States, it's 4 years. In Canada, it's 5 years.
What are like the classes of fillers? And because obviously there's like dermatology, there's giving like, you know, there's your psoriasis, your eczema, like all of that, like clinical things. I'm more curious today about like cosmetics, like those vibes. So what are like the classes of fillers? Like, or is that even how it works? Like, is Restylane like a one type and Botox is another type? Like, what are the classes of fillers?
Okay, so nitty gritty, high level, there's fillers and then there's so-called toxins. And fillers are materials that are hyaluronic acid or calcium hydroxylapatite or polylactic acid. And these...
What was that second one?
Calcium hydroxylapatite.
Calcium. Why is there calcium in there?
Well, it's more how it's reconstituted because it's able to expand when it gets into the skin and it actually gives volume back, so restores the tissue underneath the skin, and it also helps to stimulate collagen. So that's the one side, the volume or restoration or augmentation side. When people think about injecting their lips or restoring their chin or giving themselves a little bit more cheekbone or contour, filling out the temples, all of those are using hyaluronic acid, calcium hydroxylapatite, polylactic acid to restore volume and give some people augmentation of their features.
Okay, so that's filler.
Yeah.
And then what's the other one?
So I use the short term saying...
Toxins.
Toxin. Now, nobody refers to it as toxin, but it's said that way because of neurotoxin. And what it is it's tiny, tiny amounts of different forms of botulinum toxin that are used to inject into the muscles and... between 24 hours and about 96 hours, they actually work in the muscles to stop muscle movement. They stop muscle movement and therefore you don't get wrinkles. So you remove the wrinkles that happen, whether it's on the forehead, around the eyes, the crow's feet, the angry 11s or the glabella, and various other sites on the face.
I got some major glabella happening. Has Botox and like Botox been getting administered? Like, was it 2000 or?
Yeah. So the early studies were in the late 80s. And shout out to Pioneer, a Canadian ophthalmologist, Dr. Jean Carruthers, who was actually the physician who made the discovery of it. So shout out to her, big props. Definitely a universal global change maker. And following those studies, it was approved in Canada around 2000, 2001. And then other products came along, a product named Dysport, a product named Xeomin, and then products that their name changes depending on the country that you're in.
So basically, besides like your filler or your like augmenters, and then your, Botox-y, like the toxin-esque ones.
Yeah, the neuromodulators.
Neuromodulator. Honey, oh my God, I love it. There's no other like category for fillers? Or like injectables?
No, I mean, I would think about implants. So that's getting outside of the dermatologic space, getting more into like a plastic surgeon space.
Yes.
But I'd say in terms of, you know, what you can do over a lunch hour, doesn't require... going, having general anesthesia or going to sleep, those are the two main categories.
Yes,
we're talking
for like
outside of, you know, lasers.
Yes. And okay, so that, yeah, it's like injections. And then there's also, what about those threads? Did you ever see those threads on TikTok? You like those threads or you don't fuck with those threads?
So I think the threads are really divisive. I will say, I do think there's a place for them and a space for them, provided that they're being administered under very sterile conditions. And there's the understanding that these threads are going to lift by about 2 to 3 millimeters. And they're not a surgical result. You're not getting the results of a facelift with threads. So I think if one's comfortable with that, that they can proceed. I don't have the patient population that's seeking threads, but I think that they're reasonable.
Are those little threads made of hyaluronic acid or like sugar or something? What are those? What are they made of? Or is it not really a thread?
No, it actually does look like a thread. And I can't remember. There's different substances that are made of. And depending on where you live, some things will be approved and some things will not be approved. Let me just check. I do think, though, when you see them, they can be very intimidating because they look like little bits of barbed wire. Mm. And you literally have to navigate it underneath the tissue. So, it's not the sort of thing where the faint of heart would proceed with, because it can look quite intimidating when you actually look at the substance that's underneath the skin. And it's supposed to be integrated with your own tissue.
Does that mean like it literally gets like sewn through your face tissue?
Yeah, it's almost like if you think about barbed wire going underneath.
I don't love how that sounds.
Well, some people really do love it. But yeah, I can't, it's definitely not for everybody.
This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So, you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So, whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
So let's talk more about our fillers, your quarterly maintenance. Where does one typically start, or is it really so different per person?
I think it's very different per person. It may be you start with the area that's always bothered you. You say, you know what, this has been, it's eroding my confidence. It's the area that I'm most concerned about, most insecure about. And so maybe that's where you start. But I would encourage people to be open-minded when they go to see their dermatologist. They say, you know, what would you do with my face? Like, where do you see I could improve? And, you know, dermatologists, other providers as well, but dermatologists in particular are skilled at assessing the face as a whole, to look at those first thirds, middle third, lower third, and to be able to say, you know, here's where improvement is possible, and here's what it will do for you as an overall aesthetic. So trying to be open-minded, and I think it's reasonable to see somebody who is going to go as slow as you want to. I'd be really leery of people who say, oh, it's today only offer, or it's buy one, get one free, or it's, you know, refer a friend. And there's nothing wrong with incentives. That's how, you know, the world works, but it's your face. So I would caution people to avoid trying to jump on the, you know, Groupon or other economic bandwagon to try to, you know, save a buck.
And how long would you say they typically last? Because I mean, I feel like I read a lot of stories about like migrating filler, or like that sometimes it actually lasts way longer than what people think. Like, how long can we expect it to last, a filler specifically?
Sure. So our fillers last depending on the structure of the fillers. So basically how thick it is versus how soft and buttery and fine it is, and also the area in which it's injected. So a thick area injected in an area that doesn't move a lot, for example, maybe the central chin or the temples, is going to last longer than a thinner, softer filler that's injected in an area that's used a lot. So one's lips, you're chewing, you're laughing, you're eating, you're speaking. Now, neuromodulator, your Botox, Dysport, Xeomin, that generally lasts between 3 to 4 months. And it's much more obvious when that has kicked back in, because guess what? You start to get back the movements, you start to get back the lines. Now, of the ones on the market, there are some that have a better longevity than others. And so for some people, they say, well, I prefer to have, you know, something that's going to last me closer to 4 months. And so they gravitate towards something like Dysport, for example, where somebody who says, you know what, I'm pretty good with doing my upkeep more regularly, even if it lasts a bit lower time. And so they may gravitate towards something like Xeomin.
Okay, I'm obsessed. Is it true that if your metabolism is like higher, you go through it faster? Like, how can people like make their fillers last longer?
So making your fillers last longer, I'd say, would be somewhat difficult because, you know, you're meant to move your face and your body has a natural enzyme in it called hyaluronidase that's acting towards breaking down hyaluronic acid, whether it's endogenous or your own or exogenous that's injected. There are two to three things that one could do, though, to try to preserve it. One of it is some of our serums are really smart nowadays, and they actually contain agents in them that don't allow hyaluronidase, that's the enzyme that wants to break up the filler, they don't allow hyaluronidase to work as effectively. So one thing is applying serum. The other thing is trying to make sure that you're not having pressure applied to your face. So it means that you're washing your face gently. It means that you're sleeping on your back. It means that you're avoiding things like donuts when you're having a massage. You're on a massage table. And
what would you do
that
instead?
Would be another way. Well, you try to have the massage done at least a month after your filler and or adopt a different position when you're on the massage table.
Like just put the side of your face down? And then switch?
Yeah, or have the travel pillows that act as a pressure source. You could cheat. Instead of putting the travel pillow around your neck, you can put it so that it's your face is relatively elevated. It's not in direct contact with the pressure of the bed.
What about the preventative? You know how people with Botox are like, oh, it's preventative. Like, really?
So they're not wrong. It is preventative. I think it depends on what point you're preventing. So if you're in your, you know, maybe you're in your 20s and you're not seeing a lot of the lines setting in. So wrinkles can be dynamic or they can be static, meaning that you can see wrinkles when your face moves, or you can have wrinkles that are present when you're just not expressing your face. Your face isn't moving. When they're dynamic, so I only get these lines, you know, when I raise my eyebrows, that's it. Using neuromodulator, again, Botox, Dysport, Xeomin, in a preventative fashion to try to release those lines that are forming with movement, it's true. Now, is it necessary? No, but of course, why not, right? Especially when people look at their parents and they say, oh, well, I know this is going to happen based on how my mother or my father looks. That can be done.
Fuck! I think I'm there! Okay.
No, I'm sure you're not. I'm sure not.
What about like laugh lines over here? Like on
So smile lines.
Yeah.
These little guys called the crow's feet.
Yes.
So there's a muscle around the eye called the orbicularis oculi. And that orbicularis oculi, when we contract it, it forms these little lines known as the crow's feet. And it's a popular area to treat, but a good dermatologist injecting will say to you, listen, we can smooth these out if you want, but this has been proven, published in the New York Times, this has been proven to be an area associated with positivity, laughter, close relationships, a life well lived. So it definitely can be treated, but it's an area that oftentimes may be undertreated to leave some of those lines.
Yeah.
It is a positive association.
That I love. Okay, that makes a lot of sense. I'm really worried about my glabella. I'm worried about my glabella, but then like the droop. I really don't want the droop. Like my eyebrows to droop.
Well, if you treat the glabella, you won't get the droop because that doesn't do those.
But I don't want them to be disharmonious. So can I just do like a moderate dose that doesn't droop my shit, but like releases the lines a little bit?
Yes, you absolutely could do a moderate dose and then you can build upon that. And that's where the photos are going to be critical because you can see your natural progression, you know, from February through May through August and so on.
Dr. Beach, do you like love being a dermatologist? How did you become? I mean, we talked about like the time, but like, has it been amazing? Like, do you love it?
I do. I like people coming to see a dermatologist. I like it because people come to see me of their own accord, of their own volition. And we're most of the time speaking the same language. What I mean by that is it's really hard to convince somebody to treat their blood pressure if it's high. They can't see it. They can't tell. But when somebody comes to me, they've come to me because they have acne that's not going away. And they, you know, attribute it to be important enough to treat. So I like that patients are mostly healthy and we're all going to die, but they tend not to die from their skin disease. And I like that I get to see all genders. Dermatology is a subspecialty that's really for everybody. We all have skin. So whether it's young, old, the whole gender spectrum, they come to see us. And it's a real matter of, it's a mix of medicine and science for sure, understanding how things work and what the options are, but it's also the art of treating the patient as an individual. I think what I struggle with is the fact that in so many things in dermatology, there are options, but it's a question of affordability. So in Canada, our healthcare system is such that your assessment is oftentimes insured by the government. So, you know, your health card gets you your appointment. But oftentimes patients are really frustrated to find that the solution or the best case option for their condition is one which they may not have the funds for. It may not be affordable. So I think that's the frustrating aspect of providing care.
And then starting your own practice. And like, how did you go about doing that? And then for anyone who's listening to this where they're like, maybe they're like, well, I don't want to go to med school for 8 years, but I'm really into skincare and dermatology. Like, what are some other roles like in your clinic or in like dermatology that one could do that like isn't necessarily med school?
Absolutely. For me to start off with, starting my own clinic was really more autonomy. I think I was about 5 years into practice and I was kind of like, what's my end game? Like, where am I going? And I'm sure other people in other fields and professions have had this. And I started thinking about like, things are comfortable, but am I actually happy? And so that to me was the impetus for starting my own thing. I'd never dreamt of being a practice owner or an employer, but it's really was just the best scenario for me to be able to fulfill the type of practice and care that I wanted to provide. Now, other people who say like, I love skin, I really want to get into the industry, I want to be a care provider, how can I do that? One of the professions that's more common in the US, but it's coming to Canada, is a physician's assistant. So a physician's assistant works alongside a dermatologist and they're able to provide care within a certain scope of practice, whether that's seeing patients with particular conditions, they're able to administer treatments, they can prescribe as well. And that takes about depending on the setting, 2 to 3 years of school. And beyond, you know, your high school and your college or university. And then, of course, nursing is huge. We definitely need nurses who are well-versed in skin. They're often able to provide treatments and administer care that I can't. For example, with things like PRP or platelet-rich plasma, they're able to draw the blood and provide the treatment from start to finish. And so I definitely depend on nurses. And oftentimes they also have a great rapport with our patients. They feel really comfortable and a partner in their care when they're alongside a nurse. And then estheticians, our estes are super on top of things. They're on top of trends. They're on top of, you know, experimentation types of treatments. And so they're great at pinpointing what a patient might need, both from a off-the-shelf, over-the-counter, trendy aspect, but marrying that with the tried and true scientific evidence-based medical aspect that a dermatologist would provide. So in any given setting, all of us are practicing or can be practicing together. And depending on the patient's needs, they'll get the result that they want.
My client coordinator for my surgery that I had to get in December, like, I loved her so much, like, so important. Like, I'm obsessed with her. And then on my follow-up appointment, she'd fucking retired. So I never got to meet her in real life.
Way.
So like, she held me all these times and I was like so excited to meet her. So Robin, if you're listening to this, I loved you, girl. And you really made me feel so much better, girl. Okay. So, and then how often do you facial? Like, are you like a strong proponent of getting facials? Like, or do you go to the esthetician and get a little facial?
So in our office, our nurses perform a 5-step facial. It takes an hour. And I've only had it done once in the last 4 months. And part of it's honestly, Jonathan, it's time. I think in a perfect world, I would recommend a nice facial every 3 months. And I would stagger that between your neuromodulators, so your Botox, Dysprosium, and then hyaluronic acid treatments or filler, you know, maybe once a year.
What if you... Okay, because like I'm like, I really want a facial, but I also want to try Botox. So couldn't you just get your facial first and then have them do your Botox? Or do you literally have to like wait?
Absolutely.
Right? You just don't want to get the Botox and then rub it all over. First. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. I would recommend if you really, you know, you want to maximize your time and be efficient, then you can do the facial. And then following that, you can do your neuromodulator.
Because I don't get facials as much as I wish either. And I feel like one place where I really see it is like buildup of pores. Like, I feel like I can just like see my pores because it's like just too much makeup and skincare. And it's like, if you ever go to bed with your makeup on, I just feel like there's like shit in there that needs to like come out.
Yeah. I mean, using the retinoids, so the activated vitamin A acids, those definitely help to clear out the sebum, the dead skin cells, the surface debris that can accumulate in areas that are prominent, like, you know, the nose, the sides of the nose, even the chin and the forehead.
I do use, Skin Rocks by Carolyn Hirons. I use her retinoid one at night. So I need to, but there's like a two for like when the one, like when you get used to it. So maybe I just need like a little more to like clear out
Absolutely.
My shit.
Concentrations can vary and it depends on a few things. It depends on how much oil your skin produces. Oftentimes the forehead and the nose can tolerate a higher concentration than the rest of the skin. It can depend on the season. So basically when it's cold and crappy and wintry out, a lot of the time people need to dial down their retinoid. And then it can depend on what other skincare you're using. So for example, if you're using an AHA in the morning, an alpha hydroxy acid, or maybe you have another prescription medication, you don't need to be knocking it out of the park with the highest concentration retinoid. You just need what's going to work for your skin.
What about like for me, because I do feel like I have like some like just porridge, because obviously like you can't like, because like when your pores look really pory, like sometimes it's just they're like congested, so they like seem bigger, so you can't really like make your naturally occurring pores, correct me if I'm wrong, you can't make them smaller, but you can remove the congestion, but you can remove the congestion that makes them appear bigger, right?
Yes. So there are some procedures which work on the sebaceous activity. There's laser treatment known as laser genesis off the face. There's radio frequency microneedling that they can provide a refinement of the sebaceous activity, so the oil gland activity, so that the pores are less prominent. But you're right. Pores are fixed. We cannot remove them. We cannot blur them out like we would on a TikTok or IG filter. Now, certain makeups, you know, oftentimes ones that are rich with the iron oxides and the mattifying will have oil control ingredients in them. So that, again, we're not getting that shiny, glisteny look and the pores don't look as prominent.
What are, like, when you're at the airport or something or, like, after a trip? Do you decontaminate your phone and stuff? Like, what do you do to keep, like...
Okay, no, I don't decontaminate my phone. But here's two things I wouldn't do. I don't use makeup wipes.
I don't use that shit
either. Go to the sink.
Yeah, I don't do that
either. Go to your sink and wash your face. Yeah. I don't use makeup wipes. And I do act as though I'm going to sleep on the plane. So it doesn't matter to me what time the plane's taking off. As long as it's an evening flight, I do my skincare routine. Like, I'll get up, I'll go into the bathroom. I'm one of those annoying people who's leaving the light on. It's occupied for a good 10 minutes because I'm doing my evening routine. I actually don't really sleep well. In the back of my mind is the neurosis about knowing, somewhere in my mind knows if I haven't like washed my face and done some downtime, some night care routine. So those are definitely one thing I don't do, the makeup wipes, and I do is the skincare routine.
Okay, are you ready for our rapid fire last segment?
Sure, bring it.
I had so much fun, I can't even stand it. This has like been so much fun. Okay, what's your go-to budget beauty recommendation?
Sunscreen.
Is any particular brand or like affordable one?
Yeah, there are a few. So La Roche-Posay has some affordable ones. La Spa, which is a Canadian brand. They have some awesome tinted ones. Ulta MD, if you can boost your budget a little bit, they have a really nice silky one that's really great for acne-prone skin. And then even Color Science has come out with a few, including one that's an unseen one that melts into the skin really nicely and doesn't have a white cast.
Okay, and then what about like, what about like a splurge, bougie, like money is not an issue, you want to be that girl recommendation?
A night serum, yes, or morning vitamin C. So morning vitamin C It's like, it's just a kiss on the face in the morning. And it's beautiful because it protects against the elements. It's a skin brightener. It plays nicely under other products. So I love a good vitamin C serum. My go-to personally is Floratin CF.
Ooh, Floratin.
And then another simple budget beauty product I forgot to say is the eyebrow mascara.
Ooh.
So I love a quick, and because you know what? You could just bop it on when you're in the car. You don't have to worry about getting the precision strokes of a pencil. The eyebrow mascaras, I love that.
Okay, I love that. Okay, what's a product that you never leave home without?
Probably a lip gloss. I like that. You know, it's just a quick tweak. Again, I don't have to be worried about precisely applying it.
What's like, spit it out, Jonathan. It's a look. What's your favorite vintage beauty look? But it could be vintage like early aughts or like 200 years ago or like 100 years ago. Or it could be like the 80s, 70s, 60s. Like, what's just like a vintage beauty muse that you're like, oh, like that person's style and fashion moves me?
I'd say big lashes, like doe eyes. And a bold matte lip.
Is there like a person, like, okay, so like an example would be like, for me, like Rene Russo and Thomas Crown Affair, the hair, the style, the fashion, everything. Or like Tina Turner, like just hair, makeup, fashion for days, like a fashion or like beauty muse.
It's not from far away though. Like I think, you know, Tika Sumpter for me is like,
yes,
gorgeous. You know, I think about people who are current. I think oftentimes Taraji P. Henson.
Yes.
She looks stunning often. I think Issa Rae can, you know, radiate as well. So, yeah, I wouldn't say that I don't reach as much back into yesteryear. Not for any reason, just who I tend to say, oh, yeah, they look fresh and clean and elevated.
Yes, you're a present woman, honey. Yeah. Okay. what's a Roman Empire movie for you? Like a movie that you just like think about frequently, but it's like random and you don't know why you think about it. Like mine are like Dante's Peak. Like I think about Dante's Peak a lot. I don't know why.
Super weird. I'd probably say Goodfellas.
Okay.
Super weird. Goodfellas. So I played varsity soccer in university. And for whatever reason, the teams, we travel with the men's team and they were obsessed with Goodfellas. And I've seen that movie probably, you know, a couple dozen times. And yeah, it still has some real estate in my head. Bizarre.
Okay, I'm obsessed with that answer. Okay, meh or major? Hyaluronic acid injections.
Major, when done well.
Lip fillers.
Meh, on average. There's too many that are done poorly.
Ooh, I love it. Cosmetic procedures for people in their 20s.
Major, again, when done in moderation, responsibly.
Lip plumping topicals.
Major. I think that's where Rhode shines.
Yes! Collagen supplements.
That's a tough one. I'd probably say on average minor or meh.
Hair Botox.
Meh. Yeah.
Jawline contouring.
Major in moderation.
Thank you so much for that. Dr. Beach, where can people follow you? Where are you the most active? What's next for you? Like, where can people, because I know everyone's obsessed, so where can we follow along?
Aw, thank you. I am most active on Instagram. That is my guilty pleasure. My handle is Derma Beach.
Come on,
so
Derma Beach.
Derma and then my last name, Beach. And I think by the time this airs, the next time you'll be seeing me is on the social. I believe I'll be talking about celebrity skincare hacks.
Yes!
That is our daytime version of The View.
I can't wait for you to be there. We can't wait to see it. Dr. Beach, thank you so much for coming on Pretty Curious and sharing your expertise with us. We so appreciate you. And I just love getting to talk to you. Thank you so much, Dr. Renee A. Beach.
Thank you, JVN. It was so nice to reconnect.
You too. You've been listening to Pretty Curious with me, Jonathan Van Ness. You can learn more about this week's guest in the episode description of whatever you're listening to the show on, and follow us on Instagram at Curious with JVN. Come on, Curious Universe. Still can't get enough? Subscribe to Extra Curious on Apple Podcasts for commercial-free listening and our subscription-only show, Ask JVN, where we're talking sex, relationships, and so much more. Our engineer is Nathaniel McClure. Our theme music is also composed by Nathaniel McClure. Pretty Curious is produced by me, Chris McClure, Julia Melfi, and Allison Weiss, with production support from Julie Carrillo, Ann Curry, and Chad Hall.